Hi, I'm Becca Lewis, your host for the Shift the Story podcast, where we share tips and tools for making shifts in our lives from the inside out. This is the third podcast in the Shift Shuttle series. It is full of stories. Stories about the power of the feminine within. Stories about why some things we believe to be true are not. Stories about birds, my mother's kitchen, fog, and dreaming. All stories about how it has always been. So we can choose to shift what we believe to what is actually true. I tell stories about discovering who you really are and living it. Stories about being willing to grow and bloom in life. Although this was recorded years ago, the ideas have not changed. What has always been is not necessarily what is true. And until we know the difference, we are not truly free. So come with me as we shift the story together. I have told some of these, that's how it's always been stories before. Like the woman who cut the ends off the roast before putting it into the pan. Her husband asked her why, and she said, I don't know, that's the way my mom did it. So she asked her mom, and she said, I don't know, that's the way my mom did it. So they both went to grandma and asked her, and she said, because my pan wasn't big enough. So how long do we pass down fables from generation to generation because we don't ask why, so that we can then consciously choose the truth or the lie of it for ourselves? Let me give you some more quick, this is where it started, stories to get us all in the mindset of asking why, and is that true? So did you know why we have something called the rule of thumb? Because in the 1400s, a law was passed in England that a man was not allowed to beat his wife with a stick thicker than his thumb. So, is a rule of thumb something we want to follow? I think not. Do you know where the word golf came from? Get ready. Gentlemen only, ladies forbidden. Did you know what bulletproof vests, fire escapes, windshield wipers, and laser printers have in common? All were invented by women. Restoring the power of womanhood in each of us restores the awareness of the unique expression, a divine mind that appears as what we call me, but is really the consequence of the fact that God, infinite love, exists. This idea is hard for the human mind to grasp. In fact, it can't, because the blindness that we all experience is the human mind itself. When we understand even the teeniest, tiniest bit of the freedom of divine love, we are understanding it as divine love. This is good news, isn't it? As we educate ourselves in the truth and become aware of the false, and then let that false go, and not cling to it as it leaves, we experience more and more life as life knows itself. I have a few stories illuminating the power of letting go and seeing as the unlimited sees, which brings us into an awareness of what is already present in the most practical form for the moment. This happened to me recently, so it is not once upon a time, but more like just a month or so ago. Well, okay, that is still once upon a time. Dell and I were talking about how many tasks I have to do in so many areas each day so I can share and care for those who are in the Shift community. It is actually an expanding list of tasks, as I'm always expanding into how can I do this better and what else can I do. Dell is always saying to me, but you don't want help. And I'm always saying, but I do. He had often told me that I don't think anyone can help me. I had heard this comment before, and I usually don't say much, But this time, I had thought about it and realized that this was a false statement. I have had help in the past. He helps me. And I love having help, too. What made it appear real for him was that I didn't have help with a growing list of tasks at the current time. I realized what is true is that I love having help, but the help I want are people who know more than me about the task, who understand the concept I'm trying to accomplish, and who can expand past my knowledge and enlarge the vision. This also can include someone who knows nothing about how to do it now, but has a burning, proactive desire to do the work. So, I stated clearly what kind of help I wanted. Those who know more than I do about what I want to have done. Those who will be proactive, protective, and skilled. I thought back on my life and realized how true that statement was. I love help, and the qualities of the help I loved were clear to me. I realized I was not resisting help because I'm a control freak, the negative side of it, but welcomed it. I no longer let myself be self-identified with the negative. I claimed the truth of it, and here is what happened. A few days later, I was working away at a technical issue with my blogs. I have two set up at the moment, one for the Women's Council and another for the Shift. I was trying to understand how to update the service. I had done it before, but it involves so many steps, all of which can cause major issues if done wrong, and since it happens only every few months, I have to remember how I did it the last time. I scheduled the work for it on a morning when nothing else was pressing because I knew I couldn't leave what I was doing in the middle of it, or I would totally forget where I was. So one morning I started. I reread what I had done before. I studied the instructions. I still couldn't remember. I kept thinking about the writing I really wanted to do and the multiple other tasks, most of which I love much more than this one. And then, into my head, popped a name. Out of nowhere, someone would say. But it goes back to clarifying that, yes, I do want help, but a specific kind, and yes, I am asking. The name that popped into my head is the name of my nephew, my brother's son. The nephew who was reading the Wall Street Journal at 3 and told me in a very grown-up manner that a silly joke I told him when he was about that same age wasn't funny. The nephew with a music degree from Yale running a band in New York City and who also worked as a computer technician for a company. The nephew who wrote a song with these words, "These are the days the world begins to change." But a nephew I rarely have contact with and have only seen in person a few times in my life. Yes, that nephew's name popped into my head. I immediately emailed him. Notice I did not think about should I, could I, would I. He emailed me back within minutes. Yes, he could do it. Yes, he would accept money for it. And yes, he would love to work as my virtual assistant in the future on other such projects where, yes, he was even doing them for himself in his own business, knew more than me, was proactive and protective, and even emailed me back the words, "got it," when I sent him the info. Those that know me know how important that "got it" was to me. I hadn't asked him to do it, but he had done it anyway. We are all so used to taking information in and not responding to others that saying "got it" is a key point in the Women's Council, where we learn how to let others know that we heard them. So I got a "got it" and what I asked for, and much more. The story has huge implications. How long had my nephew been doing this? Years. How long had I known about it? Years. How long was I struggling with doing it myself? Years. When I became clear about what I was doing and asking, I saw what was in my own backyard. Become clear about what you are asking for, because I am positive it is in your own backyard as it is in mine. Of course, this is the message that the wonderful story Acres of Diamonds brings home to us. What we need is always present. When my children were young, I had gotten used to saying, "What's in the house?" when I wanted to do something creative but didn't have the funds. In fact, They love that concept so much that whenever they come to visit, one of them will always ask, "What's in the house?" I made the most wonderful meals and sewed the coolest clothes and bags. I still use one of them from what was already in my house. I notice, however, that most of us don't ask that question these days. We keep looking outside of our house to find what we need. I mean this literally and figuratively. We think others do things better than we do, have more than we do, are a means to getting what we need. We are in the habit of asking others' help before looking to see what we already know how to do. We think it's easier to ask someone than taking a moment to look up something ourselves, or read our email, or do a Google search, or look in the extra material drawer or the cupboard, and then be creative with what we find. This is not the same thing as asking for help when we know what we need, as I described in the story about my nephew. I'm talking about the habit of taking the easy way out as a way to hide from what we want to do, or not to take action ourselves. It is a lack of trust that we have what we need in our own home, which is actually within our own awareness of divine love. It is a habit that keeps us from ourselves and our direct supply from and as the infinite. Why not learn to ask more often, "What's in my house? What skills do I already have? Who do I know?" We can know that love has pre-provided for what we need. Love is not a post-provision. That makes no sense, does it? Do you feed your children, pets, or plants after they are starving? Or do you make sure that you have given them what they need before they get hungry? Think what divine love has done before we get hungry. This idea can be applied to the concept, what I can't stop myself from doing. Meaning, what is my unique spiritual blessing, my USB, that has already been pre-provided for? This is the acorn and the tree idea. You are the acorn. The tree is the growth of yourself, all the ideas that you have, all the talents, all the gifts. The tree can't stop itself from growing and being the tree it was within the acorn. Everything it needed to grow is found within the acorn or the seed. However, the acorn grows best when it is planted in its preference of soil, air, sun, and nutrients, just as we grow best when we are planted in our own preferences. We can transplant a tree when we see that it isn't receiving what it needs to be to fully express itself, bear fruit, so to speak, and we can transplant and rearrange our environment to also receive what we need to be fully expressing what was within us, in our house, in our backyard, all along. Another symbol of the acorn in the tree is that once sprouted, the acorn is on its way to becoming a tree. It can't go backwards, and neither can you. Are you ready for another story? I love squirrels. I love how busy they are and how much fun they have. I love their courage. I love their persistence. Even when they are getting into my flower pots to dig out the bulbs or jumping into our bird feeders to get the seed, I love them. The other day, one of my squirrels, Front Yard Bob, yes, they all have names and there is a Backyard Bob, did something that made me admire him even more, even though, like any proud mom, he scared me for a minute when he did it. My office is on the second floor, and right outside my window, Dell hung a bird feeder by the eaves so that as I work, I can watch birds. The garage roofline is about 3 feet away from that feeder. I often see Front Yard Bob on the roof eyeing the feeder, but for 2 years, it must have seemed impossible, except for this week. As I was typing away, I saw out of the corner of my eye a flying, yes, squirrel, leaping from the roof through the feeder. To get the full picture, you have to realize this is not a big feeder. It's tiny, small enough that I have to fill it at least once a week. Of course, this makes me a strange sight on our block, as many times a neighbor has driven by as I sit on my window ledge, backwards, reach out for the feeder, bring it inside, fill it, hang it again, and carefully edge myself back in through the window. Winter, spring, fall, and the summer. No matter what the weather, I'm leaning outside my window. By the way, this feeder happens to hang over our front porch deck entrance, so everyone coming to the house has to wade through shelves of seeds in order to reach the door. I sweep it when I know someone is coming, but I am sure the delivery guys say something like, "Oh yeah, I get to deliver to that weird bird lady on Tournament Trail." So, back to the front yard Bob story. If I am a little cautious as I back out of my second story window, he was not. After studying it for 2 years, he must have thought, "It's now. Go, go, go." I didn't see if he actually made it to the feeder. But remember, it's really small. So even if he did, he must have bounced off and started falling to the ground, which is when I saw him, the falling part. However, squirrels, gotta love them, must not have a give-up bone in their body, because although I had gasped and had my hands over my mouth, he had caught himself by his two front paws and was hanging from the house. He pulled himself up a little to the window ledge and gave me a look. "Oh gosh," I said, "I would help if I could, but if I open the window to let you in, it will knock you off." He must have understood, because he gave me one last look and then took it upon himself to save himself. He turned and wiggled and fell off again, caught himself again, and then leaped to safety. Off he went. But he was back today, checking out the feeder, asking himself, "What if I tried this?" I expect to see him flying again. Here's what I don't think the squirrel does. I don't think it tells itself it was stupid for trying, that he almost died, that if he tries again, he is an idiot. So go home to the nest and don't attempt something like that again. Does he? No, absolutely not. But we do. So who says we are smarter? Some of the things that I have done, wisely or unwisely, some of those things that have left me scrambling on a window ledge, holding on by the barest of means, some of them are still residing inside of me. Like an old movie, not a favorite old movie, the memories play again, off and on. And what does that do? It sometimes makes a coward and a deadbeat out of me. Afraid to do something because it might change everything, or remember what happened last time when you made that error in judgment, thoughts like this are prisons. One thought, one bar at a time, until we are locked into, "That's how it has always been." Do you have any of these old memories haunting you? Squirrels don't. We don't need those false memories either. Front yard Bob did not immediately return to try again. He didn't act like a dang fool and turn around and leap without thinking again. He left and came back. I am sure he will continue to explore the possibilities and the ways and means before the next leap. He is in no rush, but he will do it. He does not question if he should, or if it is right, or what I thought of him, since he clearly saw me watching, as he always sees me watching. He is not trying to show off. He is not claiming victim status. He is not using it as a way to brag or to pump up his ego as the brave squirrel, or even the victim squirrel, who almost fell two stories. He is living his uniqueness and his preference in a courageous and willing manner. But we do. So I ask again, which one of us is smarter? Without the human overlay, the squirrel is. He hasn't been trained to not do something. He hasn't been told about lack. He doesn't know about duality. But we do. So I see squirrels with courage, persistence, foresight, diligence, and faithfulness. And then there are the birds. They all have a diversity and variety of many unique qualities, but one in particular caught my eye this past month. It's the quality of trust that they have what they need. Outside that same window, I can see the tree that we hung a birdhouse from. It was new last fall, so no bird used it. But one day, I glanced outside and to see Mama Chickadee carry a beak full of fuzz into the house, followed by Papa Chickadee to help with the building. He backed out, and she flew out and away while he guarded the home. Home. That's the quality I'm talking about. In spring, each bird trusts, without even knowing they might question it, that a home will be provided. Of course they look for it. They gather for it. They build it. They don't sit on a tree branch reading a book about how to attract it to them. There is no need to do that. They have home. It is within them at all times. All they have to do is the action of looking, gathering, and building, but not from the perception of lack, gotta get, gotta own, but from the perception that home is theirs within. I don't think they can be sucked into the worry about will they find a home. What if something is wrong with it? What if we overpay? What if we don't get a loan? What if it breaks? The squirrel and the chickadee don't say, this is how it's always been, and mean it as being locked into a jail sentence. They may say that, in quotes, but it is a starting point. And then there is the why and the choice to try differently. Okay, on to the next story. Once upon a time, when I was about 11 or 12, I took upon myself to clean up my mother's kitchen. I wasn't really allowed in the kitchen. I learned to cook in Girl Scouts first, home economics next, otherwise known as home ec. Do you remember home ec? If not, too bad. You missed a really good thing. And I learned later by reading Gourmet and Cook's magazine. As part of this story, it's important to know that not only was I not completely clear on my personal unique spiritual benefit, I wasn't really handling it well, and it wasn't really appreciated within my family, probably because, like most of us, I often allowed it to run in the negative mode, which is what this story is centered around. Back to my mom's kitchen. I had noticed that when I did happen to be in the kitchen and had occasion to try and find something in the cupboards, that she had duplicates of many things, and I figured that she probably didn't know it because the cupboards were not organized well. So one day, when my parents were out, I rearranged them for her. I was so happy with the results. All the same things were lined up behind each other, omen boxes first, and baking supplies were in one place, cooking in another. It was very nice. I happily waited for Mom to come home and see her surprise. She was surprised, all right, but not because she liked it, but because, well, you can imagine. Two reasons, really. One, remember, I was not allowed in the kitchen. As an adult, I can see that this was probably the only place in the house that she felt was her own, and the only place she could say, this is mine. Plus, my rearranging her cupboards, she took to mean that I looked down on her skills, and maybe I did, and that I thought that I was better than her. This is the point of the story. Do you see it? If we impose on others what we think is best for them, especially if they are struggling with a sense of self-worth themselves, the outcome is not ever going to come out well. Maybe at first you might think it did, but the ramifications will sooner or later become apparent. What could we do instead? What could I have done instead? I could have left it alone. It wasn't my kitchen after all. It was clear that it wasn't. It was also clear to me that she didn't like her stuff messed with for any reason, and it was really clear to me that she was struggling with self-worth. If she would have asked, after witnessing my superior, in quotes, organizing ability to help her, I could have said yes. But I had to live it myself first. Those that want to know and have what we have to offer will ask because we are living it and sharing ourselves. This is actually what I think of as marketing. Are you letting people know what you do by actually doing it and sharing it and walking out into the world with it? Or are you remembering how it has always been and accepted it as the truth of how it has always been? Unless it is based in one mind, infinite love, one, not two. How it always has been is always based on fear of one kind or another, often of change. Continuing along this line of doing what we do without fear and hesitation, but not to fix, here is a small story to lead into telling you a recent dream I had revealing a hidden habit. You know those hidden decisions based on this is how I am and what I have always wanted. Again, if this point of view is not based on you as divine infinite mind, it is available to be shifted. In fact, it must be shifted. Once upon a time again, I was 24 and living in Venice, California. My son Charles was 5 at the time. For 5 years, I had been in a marriage that was oppressive and abusive, so my past habit of being shy had resurfaced. I had to hand out some church flyers on the boardwalk and, as usual, took my son with me. Venice Beach at that time was a milder version of what it is now, but it was still a very colorful and vibrant place, something I did not feel. So I handed the flyers to Charles and asked him to hand them out while I stepped away and watched. He, of course, had no problem doing this. Over the years, I have noticed that stepping back habit. Do you have it? Stepping back and let others that you think are more qualified than you do something you either want to do or were asked to do. Later in this call, I'll tell you the dream without going into many details, because I know you will get the idea of this, and you may think I'm telling you it because it's about me, but I'm not. It's about you too. But first, as I write this, it is baby bird season. I don't even have to look up from my computer to know this. I just have to listen. The baby finches are once again sitting on the feeder begging their parents to feed them loudly. I'm sure they are perfectly capable of doing it themselves, but instead they are demanding food that is right in front of them. The babies fly to the nearby ledge and they open their mouth and their parents take turns feeding them. Sometimes the parents hop away and the babies follow, still begging loudly for food. Mind you, the babies are fatter and bigger than their parents. Those two are quite thin. Wonder why? The dad flies off to the tree, and they don't give him even a split second apiece. Off they go right behind him. It reminds me of being a parent with little children always grabbing at my legs. There they are, three of them, sitting there flapping and playing with each other where their parents find the food. Their little heads have tufts of feathers sticking out, and they flutter their wings trying to fly better. The parents are womanhood and manhood in action, patience, love, and nurturing in action. However, soon, in just a few days, that manhood and womanhood in action will look less and less as it does now. In just a few days, they will not only allow, but demand that their children learn how to feed themselves and then move away altogether. This is still patience, love, and nurturing in action. It allows the whole bird community to continue to survive with wealth, territory for feeding and breeding in this case, shared equally. This is truth in action. In the human world, we aren't always demonstrating this. We hold on to those that appear as our children and think we are responsible for that feeding long after that part of parenting has passed. The counterfeit side of patience, love, and nurturing is turning many of our children into slaves of their own inability and keeping them from flying free as intended. As always, we use these symbols to discover perceptions of how it has always been, the lie. To dissolve it with the truth of how it's always been, that we are the always the loved of love, not material, but spiritual. Let me give you a symbol of one way that might work for you to dissolve missed perception. It's something we always think of doing. Doesn't mean we do it, but we think about it. We think about accounting for every cent we spend so that we know what we are doing with our money. In fact, while working as a financial planner, this is often the first task I used to give a client. For 30 days, track your money. Hardly ever happened, but when it did, it was very eye-opening. Or the same thing could be applied to food. for 30 days. Track every little bite that you eat. The next step in this exercise is to draw out of those lists what you are spending money on that you meant to spend money on, or ate what you meant to eat, assuming, of course, you are operating from taking care of yourself. It's a nice little test to take on if you wish to, but here is a bigger, broader idea that just may uncover the underlying "that's how it has always been" for everything in our life. Track your daily thoughts for 30 days. Yikes. Of course I know this is impossible. We think over 50,000 thoughts a day. So by the time we wrote down one, hundreds more are flowing in and out. But imagine that you could. Could you make a thought ledger or balance sheet? On one side, imagine how many thoughts you have a day that are dualistic. I am human thoughts. On the other side, how many times a day do you have "I am"? One. Spiritual principle thoughts. That's the big yikes, isn't it? It's a big one. And yet, we wonder why life appears the way it does to us. Just to reassure us all, let's remember our thoughts are not actually creating or uncreating anything. They are blinding us to what is. I know I harp on this all the time. That's because I keep hearing people say they are co-creators or take on massive guilt for the mess they think their thoughts have created. Once that guilt is taken on, the dualistic human thought side of the ledger becomes staggering. The more that happens, the more the guilt or other such emotion, despair, fear, appears on the human thought ledger side. And of course, the burden is sometimes unbearable. It's not very squirrel-like, is it? Here's the amazingly wonderful thing, though. It's like a dense fog. Have you ever been in one? Sometimes they come so rapidly that one moment it is brilliant sunshine, and then the next you can barely see your hand. Did anything really happen to the world around you? No, it's just way foggy. If perhaps thinking could make it more foggy, the more frightened you become, the more foggier it would get. Actually, if you have ever been driving when fog sets in and you become afraid, the fear does make it feel denser. Doesn't it? The sun, as in light, will eventually burn off that fog, sometimes all at once, sometimes gradually, but it does eventually reveal what has already always been there. Same thing with the guilt thought idea. We are not co-creators or creators. There is only one cause or creator, and that is infinite mind, infinite intelligence, unlimited good. That's it. And as we identify with that truth and see ourselves as the consequence of infinite mind, infinite intelligence, unlimited good, then we are freed from every thought that claims anything other than that. The sunshine of that truth dissolves our misperception, our missed perception. Now the thing is, in one way we are responsible. It is when we agree that what appears as the world is real, when actually it is only the worldview perception. Yes, we talk about the outside world as our mirror, exactly. But because what perception we agreed with, consciously or unconsciously, is coloring it all, making it appear as if it is outside and real. The human mind does not understand this, because that outside world is the human mind. It is that condition of thinking. It can't change. It can't get better. It is the fog itself. Fog does not heal itself. It dissolves when light shines upon it. And the world outside shifts to reveal clearer versions of truth. Imagine this. Any time that we even slightly, even barely, understand the teeniest, tiniest bit of the infinite mind, infinite intelligence, divine love, unlimited good, we do not understand it with the human mind. We are understanding it because we are being the understanding of all those qualities, all shortened down to one, because it's so much easier this way, to God. So in that sense, we are responsible for the perceptions we continue to enter into the wrong side of the ledger. Here's another way to look at this that actually makes sense to me when I'm trying to imagine what if, how it really is, to take myself out of the human mind. I think about computer games. Years ago, when I first started using this analogy, there weren't many computer games. And when I talked about virtual reality, it was a kind of sort of be there someday concept. Today, it's a growing, solid industry. Millions of people spend time in front of a computer screen and use an avatar to represent themselves in a game. We get to design that avatar, give it any wonderful name we want to give it, make it any sex we want to. We make it beautiful, strong, and intelligent. Isn't it interesting that we choose better computer avatars for ourselves than our avatar within the human worldview? Because that is what we have done. The body we appear to live in is very much like an avatar. Our world is the game. Don't ask me why we play it. That in itself is a question on the human side of the ledger. Imagine instead that you could step way back and see yourself playing the human game the same way that you're playing the computer game. There you are, with your hands on the joystick. Interesting word. Headphones on, talking into the mic, making it all happen. What if you forgot that you were playing that computer game? It happens actually in the virtual computer game world. People get so caught up in the game, they forget to eat, forget to take care of themselves. Hello? Forget to take care of themselves? Do you ever forget to take care of yourself? Well, imagine, will you, that you somehow get that person who is playing the computer game's attention. You say, hey, you are just in a game or story. Perhaps they listen to you, perhaps they don't. Perhaps you can at least get them to take care of themselves while they play. What if you try to explain truth to them? Perhaps they might say, but this is how it's always been. And they are correct. Within that game, it is. And we wonder why we all need a support group of those who actually know that there is much more than the game. I don't mean a group that says, I wish I could play this game better. I mean a group like the Women's Council who says, I know it appears that is what's going on, but I stand with you in truth that it is not. So yes, that is how it's always been. But when you step away from the game, you can see that yes, that is how it's always been in truth, only one, only God. So when we find ourselves in a dense fog, and we all do in the human sense, even if we can't think of a single sunlight thought, we can say this, thank God, this is not what is really going on. There are so many ways that we tell the story called this is how it's always been. We've done it this way. I have liked it this way. It worked for me this way. Here's what takes us out of that. When we really, really want to understand what God is, when we really want that more than this is how it's always been. Those aren't the words we may say, but perhaps it comes out of someone who says that it's possible for a man to fly. I wasn't there, but I don't think they said, I want to understand God as movement. Not. But that is what their drive was, wasn't it? To understand and live the quality of movement or flight, which is a quality of God. Or those that work on building the internet. Do they say, I want to understand the omnipresence of God? Doubtful. But they, in some way, are saying, I want to understand the now of information, the unlimited, instant availability of knowledge for everyone. Yes? Or what about the carpenter that builds strong homes? Is he or she saying, I want to understand the strength of God? Probably not. But represent that strength? Yes. Or the gardener, or the designer, or the artist, understand the beauty of God? Perhaps not, but definitely express it to be seen and felt by them and others. Yes, I know, some of you on this call are saying, but I do what I do to understand and live the qualities of God. Gosh, I hope so, because that's what the shift is designed to do, bring us all into the awareness of understanding the qualities of God in everything that we do, and then letting that awareness guide us into action like the cloud by day and the fire by night that led the people of Egypt from slavery. Because that is exactly what is happening here. You are being led away from the slavery of the human, that's how it's always been, to the freedom of that's how it's always been. We can do it more. We can do it more often. We can build our thought ledgers to be more and more on the side of truth. So quickly, back to my dream. Without going into the entire detail of the dream, let me give you the essence of it. It was a dream about walking out. Walking out amongst others and speaking truth, and then gently guiding them to where they are healed of a false belief so they can walk out too. I tell you this little dream story because I think we all have a desire to hide from our unique spiritual blessing. I know that was what the dream was about for me. Stop hiding. Walk out. I know some people don't look like they're hiding because they spend all their time in front of people. We think that those celebrities or famous people are not hiding. Perhaps they are. Inactivity. Perhaps you are, or I am, by being busy with tasks, or just doing enough, but not all of it. We all have a desire to protect ourselves, and that may look like not walking out and being who we really are, representing the qualities of God in the unique way that each one of us does. In a way, it doesn't matter if you never do, because remember, in the human world, we are playing a computer game. On the other hand, what a waste. Jesus said, I do these works, but you will do greater works than me. What the heck? What could he mean? He turned water to wine, raised the dead, inspired gazillions of people for over 2,000 years to be free. What could he mean? He was a man who walked out and allowed the Christ to be seen. Walking out doesn't mean you have to be in front of trillions of people or be a speaker or a minister. It just means to be your unique self. Actually be it and live it and not hide from yourself and others anymore. Which means we have to continue to discover our USB, our unique spiritual blessing. What is it? It's important to know, because that essence and the gift of what you are is the part of the fabric of the One. When we try to be someone else or not ourselves, everything is distorted. Plus, the counterfeit or negative of what you found within the human sense of it will try to bury your true essence with the gift that you are. The door that opens out is the door it tries to shut. Which means what? Take my story about my mother's cupboards. I applied my unique self that can't stop from seeing things differently, guiding others to see it too, and taking action on that by throwing out what isn't needed and ordering. I did it in this case in a negative or unhappy way. I tried to fix something. It really was not helpful in that mother-daughter relationship. This perception shifting that I can't stop myself from doing as my unique spiritual blessing applied to this human situation rather than starting from divine truth often caused me pain in my life. I found people to fix and jobs to do that I felt only I had to do. The door of your unique gift opens outward. Walk out. Yes, what doesn't want you to remember will attempt to shut that very same door. It can look like a story of your uniqueness being used inappropriately. This is also true for everyone else in your life. As part of the shifting process, it's important to see through that lie about not only yourself, but everyone else. This can be hard to do when people appear to be misbehaving. It's a skill to look past what appears negative and see what is the truth. The big T good. The big T truth, or see the face of God. Did you know that being willing to grow and bloom may look like changing your mind? Here is a little story that illustrated that clearly to me, and when I find myself stubbornly holding on to something just because it took years to learn it or get it, I think back on how this story worked out for me. When I had decided to go back to college, I was 27 with 3 children. I had applied to UCLA in the theology department and was accepted. However, as the time drew near, I became very aware that although at the time I really thought I wanted to be a theology major, what I really wanted to do was continue my dance education. So I reapplied and auditioned and got in as a dance major. So first big swallow what I thought I wanted to do and reverse the whole thing and get in, change my mind, idea, and action. Of course I was, by the time I got to school, 10 years older than everyone else, and of course, the only one with children. Also, although I had years of school, many courses, at my hometown of State College, Penn State, I also had gotten a 2-year AA degree while in California. However, I was told that because I had chosen to be a dance major, I would have to go for 3 more years. I was briefly discouraged, but went forward thinking, oh well, 1 more year and a lifetime, so what? I'll be in my 30s when I graduated, but I will have done it. Towards the end of my first year at school, I noticed there was something called dance therapy that I could major in. It seemed perfect for me, so I applied and changed my major to that. I took 1 course in dance therapy and immediately realized I had made a mistake. I actually didn't even finish the course that was so wrong for me. I went back to my counselor and asked her to switch me back to choreography. When she did, she looked at my records and realized that the switch to dance therapy for that 1 month had wiped out a whole year of required dance classes, and she chose not to add them back in, knowing I had many years of uncounted experience. So with that change of mind, twice, big changes, I was able to graduate in 2 years and then do my master's in that 3rd year. I did not sit down and try to manipulate the system. I had no intention other than being true to myself and what I was feeling and taking action on this. But it meant I had to let go. It's hard to let go when we think we are human. Another once upon a time story. For a year or so in my varied career life, I did something I couldn't stop myself from doing, putting things in order. Remember my mom's cupboard? This is not the big picture of what I can't stop myself from doing, but it does fit right in. So I had a business in decluttering people's offices and homes. I liked doing it when I could just walk in and do it. I tossed and ordered. But really, it was the people that needed to toss and order with my guidance, and that was just torture sometimes. I once worked with the father of a man whose office I had decluttered. The son hired me to go over to his dad's once a week and begin to put his papers in order. The dad had discovered some dental process, and his son thought, wisely, that finding out all the info before his dad had gone on elsewhere would be a good idea. It was so hard. I remember sitting on a couch with him with a stack of magazines, 10 out of seeming millions, and trying to get him to tear out the 1 story he saved the magazine for and toss the rest. It would take the whole hour to get through that 1 stack. Everything had to be weighed equally in his mind. Eventually, I did not feel it right to charge the son for the work and resign from that job. I imagine the son had the pleasure of sifting through that information after his dad passed away. Holding on to what we no longer need means we think that when and if we would ever need that thing we needed once before, it would not be available. No trust. When I would clean people's offices, I would tell them, if the information will come around again, or a simple search will find it, toss it. We are always supplied and guided. It is not necessary to hoard anything from stuff to thoughts. Let them go. If you really need it again, it will come around, better than before. I am a tosser of stuff. Once in a while, I will wish I had something I had given away. But it is a fleeting thought because I realize that it has been replaced with better, and I am free of the burden of caring for something in the meantime. I don't wish to be a janitor of my possessions. Do you? Our possessions, including our thoughts, bind us into a prison. Let them go with celebration, not regret. We are so much more than the stuff we think we own. We own nothing. We are caretakers and guides, perhaps, but not owners. Thank God. Let my people go. Let the stories go. You are not the story or the game. You are not the avatar. You are the son or daughter. or really man in the generic terms of the divine mind? Why in the world do we need to hold on to things? For the whole universe is what we are. I was at a conference recently. I found myself judging myself for being there because some of the ideas being discussed were contrary to what I would call acting from divine love. I was justifying my presence. Once I became aware of that inward dialogue, I shifted over to truth. Wait, I said to myself, I see that they and I are neither good nor bad nor better nor best, but what appears as a conference and people is not. Instead of what I am seeing, all of this is for me. In that, there is only mind understanding itself, and I am seeing what I perceive to be real about that. So it has really been prepared beforehand, all for me. This is true for whatever may present itself as a human experience. Whatever is going on in our lives is all for you, all for me. When we look past what appears to be material, we see the hand of God in action. This doesn't mean that what appears as bad is good. It means that what appears as bad is hiding the truth. When we see that, it dissolves what is appearing as bad. We see that all there is God. There is only the I, and we are that I as us. Each unique, each one of us is the mind knowing itself, called in my case, Becca. Here's another story. It's not mine. It belongs to another, and perhaps one day you will hear him tell it. So I will tell you the concept of it. A young artist and his wife lost the oldest of his two sons. He was devastated. He couldn't do anything. He had been a successful artist, but after his son died, he found he couldn't work. Everyone knew what had happened, and no one knew what to do to help him. So his orders dropped off, and soon the family was heading towards bankruptcy. Still, he couldn't drop the sorrow that burdened him. One day he took his youngest son to the pool to take a shower because they no longer had power at the house, and the home was due to be foreclosed that day. As he stood under the shower, hiding his tears in the water, he glanced at his youngest son, who had smiled up at him. In that moment he saw and felt what love was. And he let his burdening sorrow flow out of him. When he got home, his wife told him that a new customer who knew nothing about the tragedy had called out of the blue and ordered 48 pictures. That order saved the house, and they moved back on the path of living. Although, of course, he still feels the loss of a son, he gave up the story and became free. He not only set himself free, but his family to live as intended. He may not know the principle that worked behind this dissolving of what wasn't true, but you do. All the more reason to let the stories go of that's how it's always been, the lie of it, and move to how it's always been, the truth. It's always been only one mind, one love, divine intelligence loving itself, always. At that same conference, I saw some guys from Australia looking at a chart of people who were there. They saw the words California on the chart. One said to the other, "What's California?" The other said, "I think it's a state." Well, of course, that made me giggle to myself. What? They don't know California is a state? But then I stepped back and thought about it. Of course I know it is. I lived there for 30 years. But they come from a different place. With this thought in mind, let's give ourselves and others more latitude for not yet knowing where the state of mind that is truth is, or what it is called. When we have lived there for a while, it seems obvious. However, I am sure that each one of us find that we have only just begun the exploration of that state. So let's be willing to open our hearts and minds and arms to the part of ourselves and others who have just stumbled into that state of mind and point of view called Infinite One. Let me share one last story with you. Once upon a time. One morning, Dell and I went to bring in our trash can, but it wasn't there. What? We said to each other. Why did they take it? We stood for a moment trying to piece together the logic of the trash guys taking our trash can, and then said, "Oh well, we'll just get another." A few minutes later, Del called me to come out and see, and there was our trash can, not dumped by the side of the road as it normally was, but carefully brought up on our long driveway and placed by the garage door. We stood looking at it in wonder, literally. Later that day, since we were moving, I called to cancel our trash service to our house. I said to the woman I spoke to, "Perhaps it will never get back to that person, but I do want to tell you that whomever picked up our trash today brought the can to our door, and we really thought it was thoughtful." "Oh," she said, "sure, that was Yvette. She is our newest hire, and already people are raving about her." They knew her name. She had only worked a week, and people had noticed her act of kindness and taken the time to call in and say so. This is both womanhood and manhood in action. This is Yvette demonstrating her unique spiritual blessing in action. I plan on being sure to be outside when she comes next time so I can meet her. Wouldn't you want to meet her too? It makes absolutely no difference what job we are doing. It's how we do it. It's why we do it. With what point of view and what intention are we doing each task in our day? It's not the big things. It's not saving the world by sacrificing ourselves. It is by living as our unique expression and treating each moment and each person as equally important to be living fully as love, loving itself. It's not living, that's how it's always been, the lie, but living, that's how it's always been, the truth. Well, this shuttle ride took a little more time than I thought it would, but I loved riding the shuttle with you. Till next time, I send love. Thank you for listening to all these stories. My hope is that they help shift your life into one that matches your intention, desires, and purpose. If you enjoyed this, would you share it? Perhaps rate it or review it on iTunes. I appreciate your help in shifting stories and would love to hear yours. You can share them in the comment section for this podcast, which you can find at theshift.com/podcast. Here's your shift hack. It's not the big things that shift the world. It's each of us doing what needs to be done in our daily lives and doing it with grace and compassion. Till next time, let's keep shifting the story together.